Only one person had ever handled in Kosakasi, and her reaction to a strange touch was totally unpredictable. But Ralph forced himself to reach out towards the spider. Slowly his fingertips drew closer, 6 inches, 2 inches from the hairy body. And then the spider sprang. It launched itself in a high parabola and landed on Ralph's shoulder. The circle of the watchers broke up in a comic panic, yelling with terror and falling over one another to reach the single low doorway. Only Butso and Ralph had not moved. Ralph sat with his hand still extended, and the spider squatted massively on his shoulder. Infinitely slowly, Ralph cocked his head and peered down at it, and it began to move. Lifting the long bristle legs with a chilling daintiness, it crept sideways into the hollow of Ralph's neck, so that he could no longer see it, but suddenly he felt the sharp points of its feet scratching the soft of his throat. There was a horrified yell locked in the back of Ralph's throat, but he kept it there with a total effort of will. The spider climbed his chin and hung upside down for a moment like a huge hairy bat, and still Ralph did not move. Instead, he lifted his gaze and held that of the Matabele opposite him. The mockery was gone from Butso's eyes. And behind him the other watchers drew closer, fascinated and fearful. Perhaps for a minute they sat like that, and then Ralph lifted his hand. The gesture was so calm, so controlled, that the spider showed only perfunctory symptoms of alarm, and then, quite willingly, scuttled onto the inviting fingers, and Ralph transferred her gently back into her basket. Ralph wanted to leap up and run out into the darkness, to be alone while he vomited up his horror. But he forced himself to sit and stare impassively at Butso until the Matabele lowered his eyes. "She will fight," he said softly. "As you wish, Henshaw. She will fight again tomorrow." And he closed the lid of the basket. In Kosakasi, he had not fought for almost 3 months, and the punters, always fickle, had forgotten her. Other champions had emerged in her absence and commanded the fanatic loyalty of their followers. They gathered 4 deep around the handlers, trying to peer into the baskets and assess the fighting mettle of the caged creatures as they waited for the first bout of the afternoon. Although lantern-lit contests were held each evening behind Diamond Lil's canteen, Sunday afternoon was the main event of the week, when every digger in Kimberley was free to crowd the western corner of Market Square and pick his fancy. The arena was a square wooden structure, 6 feet by 6 and 3 deep, covered by a sheet of clear glass. This sheet of glass was the largest in Griqualand. Originally intended as a display window for a ladies' dress shop on Main Street, it had miraculously survived the long wagon journey from the coast and was now probably one of the most cherished items in Kimberley. Without it, the sport would die, and Sunday afternoons would be tedium indeed. The sheet of glass and the wooden arena were owned by a one-time copywalloper who had found there was more money in spiders than in diamonds. Ownership of the glass gave him a monopoly of the game and allowed him to charge a cruel entrance fee and take a lion's share of the winnings. 6 wagons had been drawn up in the square around the arena to make grandstand accommodation for the crowds. The canteens around the square provided al fresco service, their waiters staggering under the trays laden with foaming schooners of beer to quench the raging thirsts that men had built up during a week in the pit. The female population had doubled and redoubled since Kimberley had become part of the empire, and the ladies used the occasion to show off a pretty hat and a nicely sculptured ankle. Their delighted squeals of horror when the fighting spiders were released into the arena added to the feverish air of excitement. In one of the alleys that led into the square, Ralph and his Matabele were huddled in solemn discussion. "I do not know what that name means," Butso was protesting to Ralph. "It's the name of a dangerous woman who danced so beautifully that when she asked for it, the king cut off a man's head and gave it to her." They all look impressed. It was the kind of story which appealed to a Matabele.
"What is the name again?" Butso asked thoughtfully.
"Salome."
But why cannot she fight under her real name?
Butso glanced down at the basket under his arm.
We must change Nkosikasi's name for this fight. It is not a good omen.
Ralph looked exasperated. If we use that name, they will know it is the same Nkosikasi who has already killed 5 times. If we call her Salome, why, one spider looks like another. They will not recognize her. They will believe her to be unblooded, and we shall win more money.
That is a good reason, Kamuza cut in, and Butso ignored him. Who found this name?
Butso insisted.
Geordie, he found it in the big book.
That decided it. Butso had vast respect for the lovely gentle boy and his knowledge of books.
Salome, he nodded. It is agreed, but only for today.
Good.
Ralph rubbed his palms together briskly. Now where's the money? And they all looked to Kamuza. He was the treasurer of the group. In their years of unbroken labour, the gang of young Matabele had accumulated a hoard of gold and silver coin, for to their wages they had added the bounty on pickups. Then, of course, there were the considerable winnings from Nkosikasi's previous bouts. Kamuza kept this treasure buried under the floor of the communal hut, but he had reluctantly exhumed part of it the evening before, and now he produced a soft, furry white bag, made from tanned scrotal skin of a springbuck ram, and reluctantly counted out coins into Ralph's hand. No white bookmaker would accept a wager from a black man, so Ralph was front man for the Matabele Syndicate.
Make a book, Kamuza said,
and Ralph scribbled a receipt for 16 sovereigns on a page of his notebook, tore it out and handed it to Kamuza, who examined it minutely. He trusted Ralph without question. He could not read, but the rituals of European commerce fascinated Kamuza, and he had seen white men passing slips of paper whenever they exchanged coin.
Good.
He tucked the receipt into the springbuck skin wallet.
I have 4 gold queens of my own. Ralph displayed his life savings. I'll pay my share of the entrance fee and bet the rest of it.
May the gods go with us all, Henshaw,
said Butso, and handed Ralph the precious little basket. Ralph adjusted his cap to an angle that would hide as much of his face as possible. It was unlikely that his father would be amongst the crowd, and if he was, the cap would hardly disguise his firstborn sufficiently for him not to be recognized. So the gesture was instinctive, as was his fear of his father's wrath.
I will wait here for the money, Kamuza told him.
If she wins, Ralph agreed.
She will win, said Butso darkly. Would that I could serve her with my own hands.
There was no law to prevent a black man entering a fancy in the lists, but none of them had ever done so. The niceties of this complex society were unwritten, but understood by all. Ralph slipped out of the alley and mingled with the crowd, working his way through the press until he was on the outskirts of the group of handlers, each of them with his woven basket, as they waited to enter their fancy.
Ah, young Ballantyne,
Chaim Cohen looked up from his register, the wire-rimmed spectacles on the end of his nose, sweating jovially in the dust and blazing sun.
Haven't seen you in some time.
Didn't have a fancy, Mr. Cohen. Caught a new one now.
Ralph lied glibly.
What happened to... what did you call her? Some Kaffir name?
She died, lost a leg and died after her last fight.
What is your new lady's name?
Salome, sir.
Salome it is, then. That'll be £2, young Ballantyne.
The coins disappeared with uncanny speed into the enlarged pocket that Cohen had sewn into the inside of his long frock coat. And with relief, Ralph sidled into the crowd, trying to lose himself until the draw was announced. He found a place near the tailboard of one of the wagons, where he was partly concealed, and from where he could watch the ladies in the crowd. Some of them were young and pretty, and they knew it. Every few minutes one would pass close enough to Ralph for him to hear the frofro of her petticoats, and to smell her, for the heat brought out the subtle musk of womankind that was emphasized and not concealed by the sweet reek of French perfume. It seemed to catch in Ralph's throat, too poignant to breathe. and there was a hollow, aching place at the base of his belly, and weird thoughts in his head. The fruity smell of cognac suddenly blotted out that French perfume, and a hoarse voice close to his ear put the imaginings to flight. "You are fighting a new fancy, I see, young Ballantyne."
Yes, sir, that's right, sir, Mr. Lennox."
Mr. Barry Lennox was a big man, a brawler with a reputation for quick fists that was respected as far as the river workings. He was a plunger who had bet 1,000 guineas on a single cockfight and won. That was in the days before civilization had reached the diggings. But now he chanced as much on the spider fights. He was a rich man by the standards of New Rush, for he owned 18 claims in the No. 4 roadway block. He had the red-veined cheeks and husky voice of the heavy drinker. But what intrigued Ralph most about this man was that he employed 3 young women. Not one, but 3 women, to keep house for him. One was a pretty pug-faced daffodil-yellow Griqua girl, another a bold-eyed Portuguese mulatto from Mozambique, and the third a mulberry-black Basutu, with haunches on her like a brood mare. Whenever Ralph thought about this dusky trio, which was often, his imagination conjured up a garden of forbidden delights. Of course, neither Ralph's father nor any other member of the committee would acknowledge Lennox's existence and cut him elaborately on the street. Lennox's application to join the Kimberley Club had been met with a record-breaking 56 blackballs. But Ralph removed his cap respectfully now as Lennox asked throatily,
"What happened to Inkosikazi? I made a bundle on her."
"She died, Mr. Lennox. Old age, I suppose."
"Baboon spiders live nearly 20 years and more," Lennox grunted. "Let's have a look at your new lady."
"Oh, I don't like to unsettle her. Not just before a bout, sir." "Does your daddy know where you spend your Sunday afternoons, young Ballantyne?"
"All right, sir." Ralph capitulated swiftly and lifted the lid of the basket a crack. Lennox cocked a bloodshot but knowledgeable eye at it.
"That looks like a strong left front. New grown."
"No, sir. Well, it might be. Caught her just the other day. Don't know her history, Mr. Lennox."
"Boy, you wouldn't be running a ringer, would you? Fess up now."
Lennox looked sternly into Ralph's eyes, and Ralph dropped them.
"You don't want to go up before the diggers' committee, do you? The shame you would bring on your daddy. It might break his heart."
"It might not break Zuga's heart, but it would certainly break Ralph's head." Miserably, Ralph shook his head.
"Very well then, Mr. Lennox. It's Inkosikazi. She grew a new leg. I thought I'd get better odds. But I'll withdraw her now. I'll go and tell Mr. Cohen I lied."
Barry Lennox leaned so close that his lips touched Ralph's ear, and the smell of fine old cognac on his breath almost overpowered him.
"You don't do anything so stupid, Ralph, my lad. You fight your fancy, and if she wins, there'll be a special treat for you. That's a promise. Barry Lennox will see you right, and then some. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got some business to attend to."
Lennox twirled his cane and drove a wedge into the crowd with his bow-fronted belly. Chaim Cohen climbed up onto the disselboom of the nearest wagon to the arena and began chalking up the draw on a green-ruled board. And the bookmakers craned for the matchings and then began calling their odds for each bout. 3's on Mr. Gladstone in the first, Dreadnought even money, Buttercup 5's in the second." Ralph waited as bout after bout was drawn, and each time that Inkosikazi's name was omitted, his nerves stretched tighter. There were only 10 bouts, and Mr. Cohen had finished chalking the 9th already.
"Bout No. 10, he called as he wrote. "This is a biblical match, gentlemen and ladies, a diamondiferous bout straight out of the Old Testament."
Chaim Cohen used the adjective diamondiferous to describe anything from a thoroughbred horse to a 15-year-old whiskey.
"A pure diamondiferous match, the one and only, the great and deadly Goliath."
There was a burst of applause and whistles of approval. Goliath was the champion spider of the diamond fields, with 12 straight kills to her credit.
"Matched against your favourite is a pretty little newcomer, Salome."
The name was greeted with indifference as the punters scrambled to get money onto the champion.
"I'm giving 10s on Salome," called
one desperate bookie, as he tried to stem the flow of wages. They were taking Goliath at odds on, and Ralph shared his distress. Leaden-footed, he traipsed back to the alleyway. Camusa had heard the draw announced.
"Give us back the 16 queens," he greeted Ralph.
But the demand stung Butzo.
"Inkosikas would drink her blood. The other is a giant. Inkosikas is quick, fast as a mamba, brave as a honey badger."
Butzo chose the most fearless and indomitable fighters of the felt as comparisons for his fancy. They argued while the sudden roar of voices from the square signalled the beginning of the first bout, and the squeals of the ladies told that the kill had been swiftly made. They argued fiercely, Butzo becoming so agitated that he could no longer sit still. He leapt up and began to gear, the challenge dance of the Matabele warrior preparing for battle.
"Thus Inkosikazi sprung, and thus she drove her assegai into the chest of Nello,"
Butzo shouted, as he imitated the death stroke of his fancy. But the Matabele always found difficulty in pronouncing the letter R, so that the Roman emperor's name's Nero was mutilated in the recounting of the battle. "You must decide," Ralph broke in on his heroics, and Butzo abruptly ended his gear and looked at Camusa. In matters of money, Camusa was without question the leader of the group, just as Butzo was in all else.
"Henshaw," Camusa asked gravely, "are you risking your four queens against this monster?"
"Inkosikas is risking her life," Ralph replied without hesitation, "and I am risking my money for her."
"So be it, then. We will follow you."
There were only minutes left before the tenth bout of the afternoon. Already Chaim Cohn was upending his schooner of beer and considerably refreshed, wiping the froth from his whiskers. At any moment he would climb back onto the wagon and call for the handlers to bring their fighters to the arena for the final bout. Ralph still had 5 sovereigns to place. "You said 12s, he argued desperately with the ferret-eyed bookmaker in the flowing ascot tie.
"If you are betting your own fancy, then it's 10s.
"That's welshing."
"Life is all a welsh," the bookie shrugged. "Take it or leave it."
"All right, I'll take it." Ralph snatched the slip and pushed towards the circle of wagons, and once again found his way blocked by the grand belly of Barry Lennox.
"Are you betting her yourself?"
"With everything I've got, sir."
"That's all I wanted to know, Ralph, my boy."
And he strode to the nearest bookmaker, pulling his purse from his hip pocket, just as Chaim Cohn crowed from his perch on the wagon.
"Lovely ladies and sporting gentlemen, the 10th and final bout of the day. The mighty Goliath meets the dancing Lady Salome."
Goliath crabbed into the glass-topped arena. Her 4 pairs of legs undulated sinuously, so that her progress was stately and deliberate. She was a huge beast, newly molted, for her armoured covering was a lustrous coppery colour, and the long hairs that covered her abdomen and legs were burnished like newly spun gold wire. She left a double necklace of tiny, stippled footprints in the swept sand of the arena floor, and the crowd cheered her. Their inhibitions had long been lost in the primeval conflicts in the little arena, and most of them had been drinking since noon. There was a peculiar ring of ferocity and cruelty in their voices.
"Killer!"
screamed a pretty blonde girl with gold ringlets and flowers in her hat.
"Rip her to pieces!"
Her face flushed feverishly, and her eyes were glittering.
"All right, Mr. Ballantyne, put your fancy in,"
Chaim Cohn commanded, raising his voice to be heard above the uproar. But Ralph delayed a few seconds longer, letting the other spider complete its circuit and face away from his side of the cage. Then he lifted the sliding door and tapped the basket to rouse Inkosikasi. She crawled forward cautiously, lifting her abdomen clear of the sand, stepping on the spiked toes of her ranked legs, and then freezing as she saw her adversary across the cage. Her multiple jewelled eyes were sparkling like chips of black diamond. Goliath sensed her presence and leapt high, turned in the air and landed facing her. The 2 spiders confronted each other across the smoothly swept floor of the white river sand, and only now was the difference in their sizes apparent.